ஜாய் ஓம் விஷ்ணுபாத் பரமஹம்ச பரிவிராஜகாச்சாரிய அஷ்டோத்தர சத ஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீமத் ஹிஸ் டிவைன் கிரேஸ் ஹிசி பக்தி வேதாந்த சுவாமி ஸ்ரீல பிரபுபாத் கி ஜாய், அனந்த கோட்டி வைஷ்ணவ விருந்த கி ஜாய், கிரந்தராஜ் ஸ்ரீமத் பாகவதம் கி ஜாய். ஆல் க்ளோரிஸ் டு தி அசம்பிள் டிவோட்டீஸ், ஆல் க்ளோரிஸ் டு தி அசம்பிள் டிவோட்டீஸ், ஆல் க்ளோரிஸ் டு ஸ்ரீ ஸ்ரீ குரு அண்ட் கௌரங்கா. நாராயணம் நமஸ்கிருத்ய நரம் சைவ நரோத்தமம் தேவிம் சரஸ்வதிம் வ்யாஸம் ததோ ஜயமுதீரயேத். நஷ்டப்ராயேஷு பத்ரேஷு நித்யம் பாகவத சேவயா. பகவதி உத்தம ஸ்லோகே பக்திர் பவதி நைஷ்டிகே. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. சோ டெக்ஸ்ட் 9 ஆஃப் சாப்டர் 6 கேன்டோ 8. ரூபம் தவைதத் புருஷர்ஷபேஜ்யம் ஶ்ரேயோர்த்திபிர்வைதிக தாந்த்ரிகேண யோகேன தாத ஸஹநஸ்த்ரிலோகான் பஶ்யாமி அமுஷ்மின் உஹ விஸ்வமூர்த்தௌ. ரூபம் தவைதத் புருஷர்ஷபேஜ்யம் ஶ்ரேயோர்த்திபிர்வைதிக தாந்த்ரிகேண யோகேன தாத ஸஹநஸ்த்ரிலோகான் பஶ்யாமி அமுஷ்மின் உஹ விஸ்வமூர்த்தௌ. ரூபம் தவைதத் புருஷர்ஷபேஜ்யம் ஶ்ரேயோர்த்திபிர்வைதிக தாந்த்ரிகேண யோகேன தாத ஸஹநஸ்த்ரிலோகான் பஶ்யாமி அமுஷ்மின் உஹ விஸ்வமூர்த்தௌ. ரூபம் தவைதத் புருஷர்ஷபேஜ்யம் ಶ್ರೇಯೋರ್ಥಿರ್ವೈದಿಕತಾಂತ್ರಿಕೇಣ ಯೋಗೇನ ಧಾತ ಸಹನಸ್ತ್ರಿಲೋಕಾನ್ ಪಶ್ಯಾಮಿ ಅಮುಷ್ಮಿನ್ ಉಹ ವಿಶ್ವಮೂರ್ತೌ ರೂಪಂ ಫಾರ್ಮ್ ತವ ಯೋರ್ ಏತತ್ ದಿಸ್ ಪುರುಷ ಋಷಭ ಓ ಬೆಸ್ಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಆಲ್ ಪರ್ಸನಾಲಿಟೀಸ್ ಇಜ್ಜಂ worshipable shreyah ultimate auspiciousness arthivihi by persons who desire vaidika under the direction of vedic instructions tantrikena realized by followers of tantras like narada pancharatra yogena by practice of mystic yoga dhatah o supreme director saha with nah az the demigods trilokan controlling the three worlds pashyami we see directly amushmin in you u o ha completely manifested vishwamurtau in you who have the universal form translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai o best of persons o supreme director those who actually aspire for supreme good fortune worship this form of your lordship according to the Vedic tantras. My lord, we can see all the three worlds in you. Purport. The Vedic mantras say, Yasmin vigyate sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati. When the devotees see the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his meditation, or when he sees the Lord personally, face to face, he becomes aware of everything within the universe. Indeed, nothing is unknown to him. Everything within this material world is fully manifested to a devotee who has seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhagavad Gita 4:34 therefore advises, Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshinah. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Lord Brahma is one of these self-realized authorities. Swayambhu Narada Shambhu Kumarah Kapilo Manuhu. One must therefore accept the disciplic succession from Lord Brahma, and then one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in fullness. Here the word Vishwamurtau indicates that everything exists in the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is able to worship him can see everything in him and see him in everything. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare You know when I give class I have questions to ask. So you're ready, right? Before I ask, let me share some cultural thing here. So in the sixth chapter, it begins with after the demigods, actually Lord Brahma, on behalf of the demigods, offered prayers to Lord Vishnu on the shore of the milk ocean. And this chapter begins with that the Lord appeared in front of them. And he appeared as a thousand suns rising at the same time. So all the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, their vision was obstructed because of that glaring effulgence. Just as, you know, he's sitting in the sun and he can barely look at the sun. Even with sunglasses, it's tough. And there's just one sun. If all thousand rose at the same time, the effulgence is so intense that even great personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who are self-effulgent, could not see. So after they offered their obeisances, they saw this wonderful form of the Lord. And the whole set of verses describe his form, how he looked, what he was wearing, how his eyes or his earrings that were shining on his cheeks, etc., etc. Very beautiful meditation of the form of the Lord. And so Lord Brahma has begun offering prayers. So the first set of verses since yesterday, I think, are glorification of the Lord. So a cultural point here is that when we meet a great person or persons, it is proper to offer words of appreciation of their greatness or their achievements. It happens even in this everyday world. Suppose the President of the United States or whatever, the chief guest of whatever event, you don't just assume naturally that they will come to the stage and speak. Someone has to introduce them. And they find a particular person who's qualified in whatever field, and they will introduce the chief guest. And the introduction is usually a listing or a description of their achievements in this world. And when people hear that, oh, wonderful. And then they become even more eager to hear this person give their speech. It's proper. It's etiquette, actually. So Vedic standards give standards of etiquette. That when we are in the presence of great persons, or very qualified persons, it is proper to offer words of appreciation that are not flattery. Flattery is a way of insulting someone because it tends towards the realm of sarcasm. Appreciation must be done in a way that is that doesn't feel like flattery. Flattery means you start exaggerating the achievements. If they ate one gulab jamun or four, and you say, oh my lord, you are the embodiment of the appetite for gulab jamuns, you can eat 1,000 gulab jamuns. That's flattery, for example. And flattery brings nothing. There was a man who was sitting on his porch reading a newspaper. He was a very rich man. So a beggar passed by and he said, oh, here's a rich man. Maybe if I flatter him, I will get some money. So he said to him, my dear sir, what a beautiful house you have. It looks like Lord Indra's palace. And you on the front porch sitting on the swing look like Lord Indra in Amravati. So the man peeked out of his newspaper, smiled, and called for his wife. Oh, my dear wife, bring that $100 bill and give it to this man. Oh, that's really nice. And then he said, but why stop here? Let's continue. Oh, sir, your front garden, whatever. It looks so beautiful, so well manicured. Everything looks so perfect. And you look like the diamond in the gold ring. Man turned back and said, you know that new wristwatch that we bought? Give that also to this guy. I said, oh, really, very nice. And he went on flattering him, something else. You've achieved so much. Actually, none of your competitors can surpass your achievements. So the man said, oh, bring him all those sweets. You know, the gulab jamun, the cham cham, barfi, the brown sweet, everything. Bring it for him. Oh, very nice. I got food, money, wristwatch. He was waiting. The wife never showed up. Minutes passed. So this beggar was becoming impatient. And he said, sir, I'm waiting for these things. So he said, who are you? I just thought you said to, you called out to your wife to bring all these things for me. So the man said, listen, you said great words to make me happy. So I said great words to make you happy. We're done here. You can go. So flattery brings nothing. Yeah? And people can tell if you're flattering. When you start exaggerating, then you know, oh man, this is flattery. But genuine appreciation is, one is proper. Second, why should we appreciate? What's the point? Is the person, does the Lord Vishnu have like a little ego that unless he's appreciated, he won't give them the benedictions? You didn't say enough about me. Oh, rupam etad purushare vej. Oh, okay, that's a little better now. Okay. He's not about being flattered by praises. He has false ego. He doesn't have false ego. So the appreciation is actually the person who is appreciating, it is their way of becoming humble in the presence of the greater person. Because a human being by nature within this world is egotistical, which means he or she will somehow or the other try to bring themselves into the center of the conversation. Or indirectly or directly praise themselves. Because then they become the most prominent person. So when appreciation is given to another, the attention is focused on the other person. So within a group, if we are appreciating someone, of course, sometimes the competition is, let me offer the best appreciation. Still, we are in the center of things. But the idea is to move the focus of attention from us to that person who we are appreciating. So it's a way of humbling ourselves. And what happens with humility? Mercy descends. Mercy does not descend until the recipient is humbler. Until then, how much ever one can sit and read books, one can regurgitate it back, it doesn't matter. It's only when humility is there that mercy descends. So this verse, tad vidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So in this verse, humility has three characteristics or three dimensions to it. First is called pranipata, submission. We have different meanings for the word submission. But one practical way of understanding submission is acceptance of the other person's conceptions of truth. That's called pranipat. So we have certain conceptions of truth. We have certain conceptions of life, what is happiness, etc. But when here the other person, tattva darshi, one who has seen the truth, when they speak, we accept this and we replace our conception with their conceptions. This is called submission. What blocks that acceptance is the arrogance that I know, or I know better. So first is called pranipata. I'll explain more. Next is pariprashna. Pariprashna means to ask, to clear one's doubts, to ask questions. And pariprashna, inbuilt within it is the spirit of I don't know and I want to know. Because a person who thinks I know, there is no need to ask a question. Correct? I know. What is there to ask? I know. So pariprashna is also another dimension of pariprashna, is that they are participating in the dialogue. That they are hearing. It's an indication that the person is hearing, that we are hearing what our particular superiors or spiritual master is speaking. Because if you're not hearing, it's not going within. We're not, as we call, processing it. We're not thinking through and saying, how does this apply to me? What if this happens? I have that challenge that blocks me from doing this. So how do I go? How do I get over it? These are all ways in which we're thinking. And that thinking happens when we are hearing. It's called active hearing versus passive hearing. Passive hearing is we sit, we're there, time's up, we get up, and we leave. And whatever was spoken was like water that was poured on a duck. Does a duck ever get wet? It's always in water, but never gets wet. So there's always nice sound vibration, but it just doesn't touch us. So that's the opposite of pariprashna. It's called passive listening. And third is sevaya. To offer some service to the persons who have helped us. Particularly speaking of tattvadarshina, tattvadarshi means one who has seen the truth. So offering of service is also a dimension of humility, because then we become obliged to those persons. We become obliged that they have done us a very amazing favor. And the greatest favor that one can do upon another is to connect them to Krishna, the absolute truth, directly or indirectly, somehow or the other. So we feel obliged when someone does something for us, even if it is material, we feel obliged. Then what to speak of someone who connects us to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's our main connection that we have forgotten, and all the suffering that we are going through in this life, life after life, is because of that one little breakage of connection. So how obliged one should feel. And that feeling of obligation has to be expressed, and is expressed in service. And that service Krishna describes how to do it in Bhagavad Gita. He says it twice. Man mana bhava mad bhakta madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te. So he says, man mana, I'm so obliged that I'm only thinking about these persons in all situations of life, how wonderfully they have helped me through the quagmire or labyrinth of life. The biggest illusion is to think of the body as one's own identity. And one who can cut that for us, so we don't walk through in our own life thinking, I am this body, I'm actually a spirit soul, I'm servant of Krishna. Wow. For example. Or that material energy is such that she can entice us right into, you know, a death trap. And we caution ourselves, am I walking into a death trap here? Manmana, bhava madbhakta, become my devotee. So engage in devotional service, chanting of the holy names, serving, the nine processes of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. And madhyaji, yajana means to worship. So here's the word, purusha, rishabha, ijam. The first line, last word. Ijam means to worship or worshipable here. Krishna is worshipable because he is the absolute truth, he is flawless. He is beyond the inebrieties of this world. He is the perfect source. So Purusha Rishabha is the best of all living beings. The word Rishabha means the best of, the best in the category. Purusha Rishabha, of all living beings, he is the Supreme Personality. He says the best of all personalities. So it's cultural, to proper, to offer appreciation, respect. When we give respect, mercy comes back. When we give disrespect, arrogance comes back. It grows in the heart. So disrespect, giving disrespect or disrespecting someone is like making the heart extremely fertile for arrogance to grow. And giving respect to others is cultivating the heart for mercy to return. Therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, manadena, give others the respect, amanina, don't expect it back. Only then, kirtaniya, so we can glorify Krishna. So Lord Brahma and Shiva are showing us this, that's the purport. We have to learn from Lord Brahma as our preceptor in the disciplic succession. Therefore Prabhupada says, one must therefore accept the disciplic succession from Lord Brahma, and then one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in fullness. So these personalities are showing us, although they're very great, on their own accord, I mean, who becomes Brahma? One who has performed perfectly all their obligations in life, perfectly, without a flaw, over 1,000 lifetimes or something. Perfectly. We can barely conduct our obligations in a day, perfectly in one day, in 1 hour. It's difficult because life is so dynamic that we don't know how we are acting against our obligations. Every word we speak, every thought that comes, if it is divergent from our obligation to Krishna, it's an imperfection. Someone who's done it over 1,000 lifetimes perfectly becomes a Lord Brahma, and that Lord Brahma is flat on the ground offering his obeisances and glorifying the Lord, saying, who am I but a tiny speck? The word Vishwamurti is that he is the form of the universe, or that everything's in him and he is in everything, is in one sense a great glorification. In another sense, it's an even greater glorification. When you glorify someone's activity, which is very easy to do, it means that their greatness is far beyond that activity. For example, I don't know, suppose you pick a bunch of cilantro from one place and take it to another. And someone says, how wonderfully you've carried that bunch of cilantro. You would say, like, that's nothing. We unload stuff from the truck. from the truck, a lot heavier than that. What's the problem? But for a very, very tiny ant, when he looks at someone carrying a big bundle of cilantro, and he says, "Whoa, look at that bundle of cilantro. How do these guys do it?" So, creation of the universe and the perfect working of it is like we being an ant and telling Krishna, "How wonderfully you're creating this universe. What's that? That's nothing." Right? Isn't it in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna describes to Arjun all his great opulence of the oceans, "I am such and such. Of the mountains, I am Mandara. Of the snakes, I am Vasuki. Of all the fish, I am the shark. Of the all this," and Arjuna is like, you know, jaw dropped to the floor. And Krishna says, "Arjun, this is but nothing but a spark of my splendor. It's like carrying a piece of cilantro from here to there. What's it? I can do far more." So when he says Vishwamurta, it's a glorification. From our perspective, it looks so amazing how those three worlds are working. But my dear Lord, your greatness is far superior than this. And you, everything is in you, and you're in everything simultaneously. And finally, people generally say, "Oh, when you put a form to the absolute truth, are you not limiting the absolute truth?" And that is true in one sense, that when there is form, it's limiting. For example, for us, our form is very limiting. We don't have unlimited strength. We don't have unlimited opulence. We don't have unlimited life. We don't have unlimited vision. And our vision is relative. What we see from standing at the front door is different from what we see when you stand on the roof of the building, is different from what you see from 30,000 foot on a plane, correct? So it's all changes according to where we are and who we are. But we force the same thing on Krishna and say, because form is limiting, his form must be limiting. But that's not true. Krishna has all vantages, all perspectives, eternally, and it never diminishes. But he's all within that form. So there are evidences by which we can express to someone why form for Krishna is not limiting. Actually, his form is unlimited. Do you know of certain examples where Krishna demonstrated that his form is unlimited? Who? Oh yeah, you know that pastime? Krishna was accused of eating dirt. So Mother Yashoda said, "Are you eating dirt?" "No, no, no, I'm not eating dirt. They're lying. Open your mouth." She looked in and she had the wildest ride of her life, because inside his mouth suddenly she saw the entire universe, all the planets, the sun, the moon, the universe. She also saw herself looking into Krishna's mouth. And her head started reeling. She sat down and she said, "I don't think I'm doing well. I don't know what's going on." And Krishna's a little boy, a tiny body, the entire universe inside him. Okay, another example. Krishna's form is unlimited. Chapter 11, Bhagavad Gita. So is the Vishwarupa. And there are certain key words in that chapter. Arjuna keeps saying, "Sthitena, sthitena," from that position. For example, now let's say, suppose we want to see the entire United States of America. What do we have to do? We have to travel. Only then you can see. So we have to move across America
to see America. If we want to see the entire United States at one point or one shot, what do we have to do? Fly into space, right? Now, if you want to see the entire Earth globe, you have to fly further into space, correct? Because the farther you are, the more vision or depth of vision that you get. But it says that Arjuna was standing right there on the chariot, and he got to see the entire universal form of the Lord from that one position. So the word sthitena is used two or three times in that section. From that position, he didn't have to go anywhere, fly out into space and see, oh, Krishna's universal form. And Krishna standing right in front of him. So that same Krishna that he was seeing, he saw the entire universe. So the form is unlimited. Third example, coming up soon, in a few months, Damodar pastime. When Mother Yashoda tried to tie Krishna with a rope around his waist. Have you seen a one-year-old child? You've seen a one-year-old child ever? Sure. What is the measurements of the waist of a child, generally? A foot, maybe? 12 inches? If it's a bigger child, whatever, 12 max? Okay. She bought some rope, tied it around the tray around his waist. What happened? Two fingers too short. So she brought more rope and wound it around him. What happened? Two fingers too short. She bought all the rope from 900,000 cows, which is a lot of rope, put it around, it was two fingers too short. And she looked at Krishna, he's standing there, narrow, slim waist. She bought more rope, put it all together, his two fingers too short. She never thought, what happened, my son's like fat boy or what? She's seeing the slim waist, she's seeing the narrow, waist of the grinding mortar. She's seeing that she has so much rope, but it won't go around. Fascinating, isn't it? Because how can you put a rope around the entire universe, entire creation? And the interesting thing is, a few minutes later, she's able to do it. That's even more bewildering. But that's the unlimited form of Krishna. And there's another pastime. Markandeya Rishi, he sees the universal dissolution waters. Everything has been washed away. And on those waters, on a big banyan leaf, a tiny baby Krishna lying down with his toe in his mouth, sucking on his toe, and looks at Markandeya Rishi. And the next thing is, opens his mouth and goes, so the entire causal water goes into that little tiny baby, infant, including Markandeya Rishi. Everything gone right in. And the next instant, everything's back to normal. He says, what is this? Such an illusion. Everything goes into him and then back in. So one's in, everything's in him and he's in everything. That is what he's appreciating. So this is, of course, he's appreciating what Krishna's abilities are. With proper respect and understanding who Krishna is, and he's standing in front of them. So, any questions, comments, thoughts? Jordan?
Sometimes I have this experience of focusing specifically on Krishna, like the form and qualities of Krishna. and not connecting those forms and qualities to his godhood. I'm wondering if you can explain, like,
you're not connecting his qualities to his being godhood?
Yeah.
Give me an example, for example.
Like chanting his name and like thinking of his pastimes or reading about him, and then not being able to connect that to like the creator of this universe or his godhood position.
Generally, his pastimes help us go beyond the godhood feature. Because what happens is, with intimacy, as we get closer, Krishna's pastimes are such that they're very endearing. They draw us closer to him. So while they draw us closer to him, the sense of godhood pushes us further away. Naturally, someone's so great. Krishna's so great. How can I approach him? If the sense of godhood is so vast, no one can enter the altar and, you know, put on clothes on Krishna, garland on him, because this is someone so great. How can you touch? How can you be even anywhere near? What to speak of? How can I chant? This is one of the thing in the Judeo-Christian religions, that he's so great that you cannot call his name. It's wrong. You cannot call his name in vain. So they don't chant God's names because he's so great. I'm so yucky and dirty. How can I call his pure name? I cannot. So both are needed. So we don't, lest we forget, oh, this is Krishna, is my chum buddy, I can slap him on his back. We can't do that. The sense of his being God is necessary for us to feel tiny. But as we grow closer to him, then Krishna withdraws that, so we can approach him closer. Otherwise we'll be like, he's so great, he's the creator, I can't read anything about him that is, you know, he's stealing butter and being silly, holding on to the tail of calves and, you know, being dragged all over Vrindavan. They're opposing, I guess, emotions, if you will. So on the one hand, we remember that he's God. At the same time, we develop our intimacy with him, beginning with chanting of the holy name with respect. So these are things that will come and go on an everyday basis. When we enter the temple room, this is Krishna here, I have to offer my obeisances. At the same time, I'm chanting his holy name that I can access him.
It seems like if we just give up the godhood aspect, it seems like it becomes like theoretical or sentimental.
Or that we diminish Krishna's real position. Krishna's ordinary. The charm is that he, although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he seems to be doing things so ordinary. That's Kunti Devi's prayer, that my gosh, I'm bewildered that you are inside of everything, outside of everything, you're the creator of everything, yet when Mother Yashoda is holding a stick in her hand, you're crying. This is too much for me. And not only too much for me, the great yogis, the perfected souls, the eternally liberated folks, they're confused. How is it possible that you're afraid of Mother Yashoda? How is it? Yeah, sure.
And it seems like if we focus too much on the godhood aspect, like in our sadhana, then we don't necessarily get the like a taste for like chanting and things like that. We become, like you said, like a Christian say, like, don't chant his name. So if we think so much about his godhood, then it becomes kind of scary in a sense to chant. Or like, you should be more intense, or you should be more serious,
right,
and something like that. You're chanting the names of God, you should be very, very serious.
Right, but our sense of lack of seriousness is not because of intimacy. It's because we're still competing with Krishna as the most important personality. That's our fight with ego. I'm talking of persons who are further developed. For them, the intimacy allows them to be close to Krishna. So let's take it to the very far end of the spectrum. The gopis of Vrindavan, or the gopas of Vrindavan, they have absolutely no sense of Krishna being God. In fact, they say this, when they joke about Krishna, he's God. I'm teaching him certain things. You know, yesterday when we were wrestling, you know, he lost the wrestling game to me. How can he be God? That's their sense of things. When someone tells Mother Yashoda or Nanda Maharaj, your son is Vishnu himself, Nanda's answer is, all that is okay. At home, he is my son. I have to chastise him if he does something wrong. That's on that end of the spectrum. On this end of the spectrum is, he is so great that I cannot chant his name at all. I'll be taking his name in vain. So no chanting at all. So sadhana bhakti is supposed to bring us into a sense of awareness. I didn't cover the point of awareness that's written here. The awareness that who Krishna is, that supreme personality of Godhead, yet by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, we are allowed the access to him at a very personal level. Can we call someone's name Krishna? Like if Creator, he came in front of us, can we say Krishna? When Dhruva Maharaj saw the Lord in front of him, dumbfounded, couldn't say anything, because it was such an overwhelming experience, till he was, you know, touched on the head with the conch. It is true, someone is very amazingly awesome, but when in our conditioned state we can't understand the greatness, because in here we're greater or as great or competing to be. That's the whole problem. Okay, some statue or stone idol, whatever. Look at me. It's the fight of the ego. That's what is the problem, that we can't understand his greatness. Though we have to read in Bhagavad Gita, I am the creator of everything. Everything is in me. I'm among all the oceans. I'm like this. Okay, good. Me too. Or something. Some fight with the false ego. False ego makes the real great things look small, and we, who's very small, look very great. That's just for how false ego works. Narada Muni gives an example of a person stuck in a whirlpool. If you stand outside the whirlpool, you know it moves like this with a vortex, correct? And if you're stuck in the whirlpool, you're going round and round. But the person who's in the whirlpool, from his vantage point, you know how everything looks? Everything is going around me. I'm the center. Everything is moving around me. That's a false ego. Although we may be in a whirlpool about to drown, the whirlpool tells us, everything's going around me. I'm the center of the world. Oh, very nice. That's the problem. Our egos are too big. The lens that we are makes Krishna look very small or ordinary. Does that help? Okay. Jai Baldev.
Krishna, thank you for your class. You were mentioning in the beginning of class about appreciating great personalities. And my question is related to how can that be detrimental to us? Like, for example, in the material world, basically, you know, when we appreciate someone, it's usually with the intention of getting something. Like, you know, you appreciate celebrities, great personalities, and we could see their friends, you know, have motive. And how can that hurt us in Christian consciousness? Because it's often seen that when you're trying to appreciate people who may have control of our destiny, like let's say to get initiated, I'm appreciating a spiritual master or appreciating someone who will recommend me to the spiritual master. And then it's like, you know, then you don't get what you want. Like we hear that, you know, kama krodha, you know, if you desire something, don't receive it, then anger. So how can that be considered a spiritual desire when it may not be, like when we're asking to be recommended and doesn't happen, and then somebody else gets recommended and we've been in longer, and then, you know, completely it destroys our consciousness.
Sure.
So how can that be detrimental when we think it's spiritual when we're offering praise to the spiritual or some authorities just with the intention, you know, how can it be detrimental to our Christian consciousness?
We get whatever we are motivated for. So if we are motivated for initiation, we get initiation, but we may not get mercy. If you're motivated for something, we get that thing. It may not be. So we may appreciate Krishna because we want something, we get that. But we are responsible for our motivations, not someone else. We are responsible for it. So we have to work on purifying our motivation. So when I ask, I know what I'm asking for. So coming to Krishna and appreciating him and asking him, please give me your mercy. Great. That's a great motivator. I need your mercy. Versus, I'm appreciating you because I want something else. Then we get that something else. But the real medicine is mercy. So we may get other things, but we may miss it. So we are appreciating someone, so we get some appreciation back. Yeah, we get an appreciation back, no doubt. But it doesn't satisfy the heart because we haven't received their mercy. Here it says upadekshanti. Upadekshanti is they're giving certain vision. And that giving of vision is an act of mercy. And mercy, like I said earlier, mercy is a reciprocation for humility. So if my humility is feigned, that I want something else material, then I don't get mercy, I get something material in return. So then it's my responsibility to check what I'm asking for. And how am I detrimental? How am I hurting myself? By nurturing impure motivations. And our default condition is impure motivation. And we're trying to purify it to the best of our capacity. And our sincerity is the strength. It's the tensile strength in the rope that allows us to pull ourselves out of that situation. So.
Thank you. I have another appreciation and an aspect of that question may elaborate on a little bit. One thing I appreciate, I remember in Leelamrita, Srila Prabhupada Leelamrita, one Matsuji devotee of Prabhupada said she wanted to be more closer to Prabhupada. But she realized on her own that, of course, Krishna's mercy, that being close to Prabhupada isn't about proximity, it's about being getting serious about Krishna consciousness. And then another devotee realized the same thing in a harder way. It was the temple president of Paris. And it was he hadn't met Prabhupada at all. It was the Rigved system at the time. And he was somehow or other, him and another devotee was late to meet Prabhupada when Prabhupada was giving a class, and all the devotees were in the room. And so he came in late for whatever reason. And so what happened was he bypassed all the devotees, walked all the way up to the front, and sat directly next to Prabhupada, bypassed all the devotees. He was even late. So then he was like, that was when Prabhupada first gave me my first instruction. He said, Prabhupada didn't even look at me. And so my question is basically, it's like you were mentioning about appreciation of great personalities. So it appears that, you know, great personalities, he bypassed a lot of the great personalities because he thought that only Prabhupada was a great personality.
And or he that he himself was great enough.
He himself. So how can we realize the fact that it's not that our Krishna, because unfortunately Krishna has 24-hour surveillance. Even within our heart. So how can we realize the fact that our Christian consciousness is not just dependent on somebody who externally has some authority over us, but even the small bhakta, you know, that we bypass.
We realize through hearing, like discussing. And if we don't realize it through hearing, we realize it through a nice experience Krishna will give us. Either way, as long as we learn, that's what matters. Ideally, it's better to learn through hearing. But we're thick skin. So it, sometimes it gets a little, you know, a little school, admission into the school of hard knocks, as they say. You learn a lesson differently. But as long as we're learning, that's what matters. I'm sure that person learned a lesson for the rest of his life by one, you know, Prabhupada's ignoring him for one's time. I'm sure. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.